Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back, 17 till the hour. Thank you very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. It was a pleasure to continue to be with you. I'm Jim Blasingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show. Glad you're here. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and the one for my new book, The Third Ingredient, with the number three, thethirdingredient.com. It's just you and me. I'm talking about the Fed. We got a Fed meeting coming up in a couple of weeks, another one. The meeting, in the old days, they only met once for one day, and then they maybe once or twice a year they'd meet two days in a row, but almost always it was just one day, and now it's almost all of them are 2 days. You got a lot more work to do, I guess. But I want to talk about the way the Federal Reserve Board is structured, because this will help you understand some of the new appointments that are going on right now. If you remember, one of our brain trust members, one of our original founding brain trust members, Stephen Moore, was on my show doing the Fed report with me, my Fed show, on that day. And then that afternoon, actually, President Trump nominated him to be a member of the Fed. And, of course, you remember then that I'm trying to remember the other guy's name that was nominated. I'll say it in a minute. Herman Cain was nominated to fill another position on the board, and those have to go through the Senate. They have to be confirmed by the Senate, and because they're, even though it is a non-elected organization, and the president really doesn't have any direct influence on what the Fed does, the Congress doesn't really either. They do have oversight in terms of who they put on the board. So let me explain how the structure works. You have a chairman and a co-chairman, a vice chairman, I guess. Which is the leader, right? The top two folks. Then you've got a board of governors that there are five of those. So now that's seven members. And then you've got 12 bank presidents. There are 12 Federal Reserve banks around the country. There's one in Philadelphia, there's one in Dallas, there's one in Atlanta, there's one in San Francisco, there's one in St. Louis, there's one in Dallas. We have all across the way that we've got all these different banks, and so the 12 bank presidents join the five governors and the two top folks, the chairman and the vice chairman. That makes 19. So those are the leaders of the group, and they make up what's called the Federal Open Market Committee, the FOMC. You see that all the time, but anytime during that period of time, only five of the bank presidents vote. The governors vote, the five governors vote, and five of the bank presidents vote, and the two top people, the chairman and the vice chairman, vote. So in any given year, seven of the bank presidents set out. And they rotate off every third year. So whenever interest rates go up or down, all 19 of the members of the Fed get to contribute to the conversation, the discussion about whether interest rates should be raised, should they do other things with the money, with the monetary system or whatever. Whether the quantitative easing that I'll tell you about a little bit later on. So all of that, those voters will decide, even though everybody speaks and has to say, seven of them then when the vote is taken, should we raise rates like they did last year, three times, I guess, as I remember, then only 12 make that decision. And you may remember that in 1999, while he was a president of the Federal Bank of Dallas, a member of the FOMC, one year while he was a voting member, Bob McTeer, president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, was a member of my brain trust, and still is, by the way. And so in the off weeks between the meetings, he would join us as a member of the FOMC and report to us, not what was going on. He wouldn't divulge anything that went on inside. He would just talk to us about how the Fed works. It was a great experience. I still have those archives. You can go back and listen to them. This is how I learned about this, folks, by interviewing him and others. And so their decisions are about the monetary policies of our country. The government manages the fiscal side, but their decision in the Fed is the monetary side. And that's where they, again, I think of them sort of as the Pharisees, right? The Pharisees said that they had the power of binding and loosing. And the Fed's kind of like that with the monetary supply. Now, one of the things that they've done differently, when they ran out of interest rates in order to deal with the economy after 2008, they did something that was essentially unprecedented. They started buying treasuries, and they loaded up on that. And that put a lot, when they bought those treasuries, put a lot of liquidity into the market. And they wind up with about a $4.5 trillion balance sheet of treasuries, unprecedented. That was part of the quantitative easing, they called it. Remember that? And that put all this money into the economy, and it primarily helped Wall Street, corporate America. Very little help for Main Street. That was always a thorn in my side, and you remember I talked about that. So just a little bit of a review on how the Fed works. When I come back, I'll wrap this up after the break. Tintel, stay with us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.